This week's Escape Pod is brought to you by Audible.com and Metatropolis. Don't know what Metatropolis is? More details after the story. And get the first episode free by going to audible.com/metapod.
Escape Pod 181. October 25th, 2008. Today's story, Resistance, by Tobias S. Buckhill.
Hello and welcome to Escape Pod. I'm Steve Ely. One thing we don't do a whole lot of, given our subject matter, is current events. SF is said to hold a mirror up to our world by showing us what could be, but it's pretty rare for our world in that phrase to be taken to mean this week. That said, this week we have a very topical story. We present Resistance by Tobias S. Buckhill. Mr. Buckhill lives in Ohio, but was born in Grenada and grew up in the Virgin Islands. He's the author of the novels Crystal Rain, Ragamuffin, and his latest, Sly Mongoose, as well as an upcoming Halo tie-in novel, The Cole Protocol. This story first appeared in the recent anthology Seeds of Change, edited by John Joseph Adams. By the way, a minor revision on a prior episode. I neglected to say that our Jeremiah Tolbert story from a couple of weeks ago, Arties Aren't Stupid, also came from the Seeds of Change anthology. The other 11 stories are also excellent. I recommend it. So, pull out your old MacGyver tapes and see how many explosives you can mix from whatever's in the pantry. It's story time. Resistance by Tobias S. Buckhill. 4 days after the coup, Stanuel was ordered to fake an airlock pass. The next day, he waited inside a cramped equipment locker large enough to hold two people, while an armed rover, the size and shape of a helmet, wafted around the room, twisting and counter-rotating pieces of itself as it scanned the room briefly. Stanuel held his breath and willed himself not to move or make a sound. He just floated in place, thankful for the lack of gravity that might have betrayed him had he needed to depend on locked, nervous muscles. The rover gave up and returned to the corridor, the airlock door closing behind it. Stanuel slipped back out. The rover had missed him because he'd been fully suited up for vacuum. No heat signature. Behind the rover's lenses had been the eyes of Pan. And since the coup, anyone knew better than to get noticed by Pan. Even the airlock pass cut it too close. He would disappear when Pan's distributed networks noticed what he'd done. By then, Pan would not be a problem. Stanuel checked his suit over again, then cycled the airlock out. The outer door split in two and pulled apart. But where was the man Stanuel was supposed to bring in? He realized there was an inky blackness in the space just outside the ring of the lock. A blotch that grew larger and then tumbled in. The suit flickered and turned a dull gray to match the general interior color of the airlock. The person stood up, and Stanuel repressurized the airlock. They waited as Stanuel snapped seals and took his own helmet off. He hung the suit up in the locker he'd just been hiding in. "We have to hurry. We only have about 10 minutes before the next rover patrol." Behind him, Stanuel heard crinkling and crunching. When he turned around, the spacesuit had disappeared. He now faced a tall man with dark skin and long dreadlocks past his shoulders and eyes as gray as the bench behind him. The spacesuit had turned into a long, black trench coat. "Rovers?" the man asked. Stanuel held his hand up and glyphed a 3D picture in the air above his palm. The man looked at the rover spin and twist and shoot. "Originally, they were station maintenance bots, semi-autonomous, remote-operated vehicles. Now they're armed."
"I see."
The man pulled a large backpack off his shoulders and unzipped it. "So, what now?" Stanuel asked. The gray eyes flicked up from the pack.
"You don't know?"
"I'm part of a cell, but we run distributed tasks, only checking it with people who assign them. It keeps us insulated. I was only told to open this airlock and let you in. You would know what comes next. Is the attack tonight? Should I get armed? Are you helping the attack?" The man opened the pack all the way to reveal a small arsenal of guns, grenades, explosives, and, oddly, knives. Very large knives. He looked up at Stanuel.
"I am the attack. I've been asked to shut Pan down.
But you're not a programmer.
I can do all things through explosives, who destroy for me.
The man began moving the contents of the pack inside the pockets and straps of the trench coat, clipped more to his belt and thigh, as well as to holsters under each arm, and then added pieces to his ankles. He was now a walking arsenal. But only half the pack had been emptied. The mysterious mercenary tossed it at Staniel.
Besides, you're going to help.
Me?
According to the resistance message, you're a maintenance manager, recently promoted. You still know all the sewer lines, access ducts, and holes required to get me to the tower. How long do you guess we have before it notices your unauthorized use of an airlock?
An hour, Staniel said. The last time he'd accidentally gone somewhere Pan didn't like, Rovers had been in his office within an hour.
And can we get to the tower within an hour, Staniel, without being noticed?
Staniel nodded. The large, well-armed man pointed at the airlock door into the corridor.
Well, let's not dally.
Can I ask you something? Staniel asked.
Yes.
Your name? You know mine. I don't know yours.
Pepper, said the mercenary. Now can we leave?
A single tiny sound ended the secrecy of their venture, the buzz of wings. Pepper's head snapped in the direction of the sound, locks spinning out from his head. He slapped his palm against the side of the wall, crushing a butterfly-like machine perfectly flat.
A bug, Staniel said.
Pepper launched down the corridor, bouncing off the walls until he hit the bulkhead at the far end. He glanced around the corner.
Clear.
Pan knows you're in Haven now. Staniel felt fear bloom, an instant explosion of paralysis that left him hanging in the air. It will mobilize.
Then get me into the tower quick. Let's go, Staniel. We're not engaged in something that rewards the slow.
But Staniel remained in place.
They chose me because I had no family, he said. I had less to lose. I would help them against Pan, but...
Pepper folded his arms.
It's already seen you. You're already dead.
That sunk in. Staniel had handled emergencies. Breaches, where vacuum flooded in, sucking the air out. He'd survived explosions, dumb mistakes, and even being speared by a piece of rebar. All by keeping cool and doing what needed to be done. He hadn't expected, when told that he'd need to let in an assassin, that he'd become this involved. But what did he expect? That he could be part of the resistance and not ever risk his life? He'd risked it the moment one of his co-workers had started whispering to him, talking about overthrowing Pan, and he'd only stood there and listened. Staniel took a deep breath and nodded.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The space station Haven was a classic wheel, rotating slowly to provide some degree of gravity for its inhabitants so that they did not have to lose bone mass and muscle, the price of living in no gravity. At Haven's center lay the hub. Here lay an atrium, the extraordinary no-gravity gardens and play areas for Haven citizens. Auditoriums and pools and labs and tourist areas and fields, the heart of the community. Dripping down from the hub, docking ports, airlocks, antennae, and spare mass from the original asteroid Haven had taken its metals. This was where they floated now. But on the other side of the hub hung a long and spindly structure that had once housed the central command for the station. A bridge, of sorts, with a view of all of Haven, sat at the very tip of the tower. The bridge was duplicated just below in the form of an observation deck and restaurant for visitors and proud citizens and school trips. All things the tower existed for in that more innocent time before. Now Pan sat in the bridge, looking out at all of them, both through the large portal-like windows up there and through the network of rovers and insect cams scattered throughout Haven, one of which Pepper had just flattened. Staniel knew they no longer had an hour now. Pepper squatted in front of the hatch.
It's good I'm not claustrophobic.
This runs all the way to the restaurant at the tower. It's the fastest way there.
If we don't choke on fumes and grease first.
Pepper scraped grease off the inside. Staniel handed him a mask with filters from the tiny utility closet underneath the pipe. He also found a set of headlamps.
Get in. I'll follow. We need to hurry.
Pepper hustled himself into the tube, and Staniel followed, worming his way in. When he closed the hatch after them, the darkness seemed infinite until Pepper clicked a tiny penlight on. Moving down the tube was simple enough. They were in the hub. They were weightless. They could use their fingertips to slowly move their way along. After several minutes, Pepper asked, voice muffled by the filter,
"So how did it happen? Haven was one of the most committed to the idea of techno-democracy."
There were hundreds of little bubbles of life scattered all throughout the asteroid belts, hidden away from the mess of Earth and her orbit by distance and anonymity, each one a petri dish of politics and culture, each a pearl formed around a bit of asteroid dirt that birthed it.
"There are problems with a techno-democracy," muttered Staniel. "If you're a purist, like we were, you had to have the citizenry decide on everything."
The sheer amount of things that a society needed decided had almost crushed them. Every minute, everyone had to decide something. Pass a new law. Agree to send delegates to another station. Accept taxes. Divvy out taxes. Pay a bill. The stream of decisions became overwhelming, constantly popping up and requiring an electronic yes or no. And research was needed for each decision.
"The artificial intelligence modelers came up with our solution. They created intelligences that would vote just as you would if you had the time to do nothing but focus on voting."
"They weren't real artificial intelligences. The modelers took your voting record and paired it to your buying habits, social habits, and all the other aspects of your life that were tracked in modern life to model your habits. After all, if a bank could use a financial profile to figure out if an unusual purchase didn't reflect the buyer's habits and freeze an account for safety reasons, why couldn't the same black box logic be applied to a voter's patterns?"
Pepper snorted. "You turned over your voting to machines."
Staniel shook his head, making the headlamp's light dart from side to side.
"Not machines. Us. The profiles were incredible. They modeled what votes were important enough, or that the profilers were uncertain to get right, so that they only passed on the important ones to us. They were like spam filters for voting. They freed us from the incredible flood of meaningless minutiae that the daily running of a government needed."
"But they failed," Pepper grunted.
"Yes and no."
"Quiet."
Pepper pointed the penlight down.
"I hear something, clinking around back the way we came from."
"Someone chasing us?"
"No, it's mechanical."
Staniel thought about it for a moment. He couldn't think of anything.
"Rover?"
Pepper stopped, and Staniel collided with his boots.
"So our time has run out."
"I don't know."
A faint clang echoed around them.
"Back up,"
Pepper said, pushing him away with a quick shove of his boot to the top of his head.
"What are you doing?"
"We've come far enough."
Four extremely loud bangs filled the tube with absurdly bright flashes of light. Pepper moved out through the ragged rip in the pipe. Another large wall blocked him.
"What is this?"
Staniel, still blinking, looked at it from inside the pipe.
"You'll want the other side. Nothing but vacuum on that side."
Had Pepper used more explosive, they might have just been blown right out the side of Haven.
"Right."
Pepper twisted further out, and another explosion rocked the pipe. When Staniel wriggled out and around the tube, he saw trees. They'd blown a hole in the lawn of the gardens. They carefully climbed out, pushing past dirt and the tubes and support equipment that monitored and maintained the gardens and soaked the roots with water.
"Now what?" asked Staniel. "We're going to be seen."
"Now it gets messy," Pepper said.
He pulled Staniel along toward the large elevator at the center.
"I'm going with a frontal assault. It'll be messy, but I do well at messy."
"There's no reason for me to be here, then," Staniel said. "What use will I be? I failed to get you there through the exhaust pipes. Why not just let me go?"
Pepper laughed.
"Not quite ready to die for the cause, Staniel?"
"No. Yes. I'm not sure. It just feels like suicide, and I'm not sure who that helps."
"You're safer with me."
Pepper launched them from branch to branch through the trees. Now that curfews were in effect, no families perched in the great globe of green, no kids screaming and racing through the trees. It was eerily silent. Pepper slowed them down in the last grove of trees before the elevators at the core of the gardens. As they gently floated towards the lobby at the bottom of the shaft, three well-built men, the kind who obviously train their bodies up on the rim of the wheel, turned the corner. They carried stun guns, non-lethal, but still menacing. Staniel heard a click. Pepper held out a gun in each hand. Real guns, perfectly lethal.
"I'd turn those off," Pepper said to the men, "and pass them over, and then no one would get hurt."
They hesitated, but then the commanding voice of Pan filled the gardens. "Do as he says, and then escort him to me." They looked at each other, unhappy, and tossed the guns over. Pepper threw them off into the trees.
"You're escorting us?"
The three unhappy security men nodded. "Pan says you have an electromagnetic pulse weapon. We're not to provoke you." Staniel bit his lip. It felt like a trap. These traitors were taking them into the maw of the beast, and Pepper, as far as he could see, looked cheerful about it. "It's a trap," he muttered.
"Well, of course it is," Pepper said. "But it's a good one that avoids us skulking about, getting dirtier, or having to shoot our way through."
The mercenary followed Pan's lackeys into the elevator. He turned and looked at Staniel, hovering outside.
"And Pan's right. I do have an EMP device. But if I trigger it this deep into the hub, I take out all your power-generating capabilities and computer core systems."
"Really?"
Staniel was intrigued. Pepper held up a tiny metal tube with a button on the end.
"If I get to the tower," Pepper said, "I can trigger it and take out Pan while leaving the rest of the station unaffected."
Staniel had weathered 5 days of his beloved haven under the autocratic rule of Pan, the trickster. He'd travel with Pepper to see it end, he realized. He pulled himself into the elevator. For 5 days, Haven's populace had a ruler, a single being whose word was law, whose thoughts were made policy. Pan stood in the center of the command console, its face lit by the light of 100 screens and the reflections off the inner rim of Haven's great wheel. Pan wore a simple blue suit, had tan skin, brown eyes, and brown hair. His androgynous face and thin body meant that had he stood in a crowd of Haven citizens, he would hardly have been noticed. He could be anybody or everybody. He also flickered slightly as he turned.
"My executioner and his companion. I'm delighted," Pan said. "If I could shake your hand, I would."
He gave a slight bow. Pepper returned it. Pan smiled.
"I've been waiting for you two for quite a while. I apologize for sending the rover up the exhaust tube."
Pepper shrugged. "No matter. So what now? I have something that can take you out. You have me surrounded by nasty surprises."
Pan folded its arms.
"I don't do nasty surprises, Pepper. I'm not a monster, contrary to what Staniel might say. You have an EMP device, and if you were to set it off further down the tower, you would shut all Haven down. True, I have backup capabilities that can mitigate that, but your device presents a terrible risk to the well-being of the citizenry. With the device and you up here, the only risk is to me."
An easy enough decision, Staniel thought. Trigger the damn device. But Pepper glanced around the room, maybe seeing traps that Staniel couldn't.
"If you don't do nasty surprises, what stops me from zapping you out right here, right now?"
"I would like to make you an offer, if you'd listen."
Pepper's lips quirked.
"I wouldn't be much of a mercenary if I just accepted the higher bid in the middle of the job. You don't get repeat work very often that way."
Pan held its hands up.
"I understand. But consider this. I am, indirectly, the one who hired you."
Staniel had to object.
"The Resistance! I run it." Pan smiled. "I know everything it does, who it hires, and in many cases, I give it the orders."
Staniel felt like he'd been thrown into a freezing cold vat of water. He lost his breath.
"What do you mean? You infiltrated it?"
They had lost, even before they'd started. Pan turned to the mercenary.
"Staniel is bewildered, as are many, by what they created, Pepper. I'm merely the amalgamated avatar of the converged will of all the simulations made to run this colony. The voter simulations kept taking up energy, so the master processing program came up with a more elegant solution. Me. Why run millions of emulators when it could fuse them all into a single expression of its will that would run the government?
A clever solution, Pepper said.
A techno-democracy, even more so than the vanilla kind, is messy. Dangerously so. With study committees and votes on everything, things that needed to be done quickly didn't get done in time. So the emulations decided to put forward a bill, buried in the middle of some other obscure administrivia. The vote was that emulations be given command of the government.
Staniel stepped forward. We woke up and found that in a single moment all of Haven had been disenfranchised.
By your own desires and predictive voting algorithms, Pan said. In a way, yes. In a way, no.
Staniel spit at the dictatorial hologram in front of him. Then the emulators decided that a single amalgamation, an avatar, an expression of all their wills, would work better. So then even our own voting patterns turned over their power.
Not surprising, Pepper said. You didn't have the maturity to keep your own vote. You turned it over to the copies of yourselves. Why be surprised that the copies would do something similar and turn to a benevolent dictator of their own creation?
Pan looked pleased.
Dictators aren't so bad, if they're the right dictator. And it's hard-coded into my very being to look out for the community. That's why I look like this. It waved a hand over its face. I'm the average of all the faces in Haven. Political poll modeling shows that were I to run for office, it would be almost guaranteed based on physiological responses alone.
Staniel looked at Pepper.
Pan may have infiltrated, but you are still paid to destroy it. Do it! No, Pan said. You might pull that trigger, but if you do, you destroy what the people of Haven really wanted, what they desired, and what they worked very hard to create, Pepper, even if they didn't realize they consciously wanted it.
I've heard you get the government you deserve, Pepper said, but this is something else. They created their own tyranny.
But, Pepper, I'm not a tyrant. If they vote as a whole to oust me, they can do it.
Pepper moved over to one of the great windows to look out at the inside rim of Haven. Thousands of distant portholes dotted the giant wheel, lit up by the people living inside the rooms across from them.
Look around you, Pan implored. There are plenty who like what I'm doing. I'm rebuilding parts of Haven that have been neglected for years. I'm improving agriculture as we speak. I've made the choices that were hard, got things into motion that just sat there while people quibbled over them. I am action. I am progress.
Staniel kicked forward, and Pepper glanced back at him.
I think Staniel objects.
Pan sighed.
Yes, a few will be disaffected. They will always be disaffected. That was why I created outlets for the disaffected, because they are a part of me as well. But my plea to you, Pepper, is not to break this great experiment. I can offer you more money, a place of safety here whenever you would want it, and Haven as a powerful ally to your needs.
Pepper nodded and sat in the air, his legs folded.
I have a question.
Proceed.
Why do they call you Pan?
They call me Pan because it's short for Panopticon. An old experiment. If you were to create a round jail with a tower in the center, with open cell walls facing it, and the ability to look into every cell, you would have the ultimate surveillance society. The Panopticon. In some ways, Haven is just that, with me at the center.
Pepper chuckled.
I'd half expected some insane military dictator wearing a head of antlers calling himself Pan.
Pan did not laugh. It leaned closer.
Pepper, understand me. This is not your fight. I'm the naturally elected ruler of Haven. The choice to remove me, that isn't yours. I did not bring you here to destroy me, but for other reasons.
The choice?
The word affected Pepper in some way Staniel could not figure out. He looked over at Staniel.
Then if you're a benevolent ruler, you will escort me off Haven, leave Staniel alive, and move on to other things. After all, it was your orders that set Stanuel on this path.
Of course. It's that or a sentence in one of Haven's residential rooms. You'll be locked in, but comfortable. There do have to be ways to handle such things. Exile or confinement.
Okay, Mr. Pan. Okay. My work here is done.
Pepper moved toward Stanuel with a flick of his feet.
Come on, Stanuel. It's time to leave the tower.
Stanuel could hardly look Pepper in the eye.
I can't believe you left there.
Pan made a good argument.
Pan offered to pay you more. That's all.
There's that, but I won't take it.
Pepper scratched his head.
If I destroyed Pan, what would you do?
Stanuel frowned. What do you mean?
You said the emulations wouldn't be allowed to hold direct control earlier. Does that mean you'd allow the emulations to come back and decide votes for you?
One assumes. We might not have gotten them right, but if we can fix that error, things can go back to the way they were.
Pepper unpacked his suit and stepped into it. It crinkled and cracked as he zipped it up.
And then I'll be back, because you'll repeat the same pattern all over again.
What?
For all your assumptions, you're not quite seeing the pattern. Deep down, somewhere, you all want Pan. You don't want the responsibility of voting. You want the easy result.
That's not true, Stanuel objected.
Oh, come on. Think of all the times princes and princesses are adored and feted. Think of all the actors and great people we adore and fawn over.
That doesn't make us slavish followers.
Pepper cocked his head.
No, but we still can't escape the instincts we carry from being a small band of hunter-gatherers making their way across a plain, depending on a single leader who knew the ins and outs of their tiny tribe and listened to their feedback. That doesn't scale, so we have inelegant hacks around it. Stanuel, you all created a technological creature, able to view you all and listen to all your feedback and embody a benevolent single tribal leader. Not only was it born out of your unconscious needs, even your own emulations overwhelmingly voted it into power as sole ruler of Haven.
Stanuel raised his hand to halt Pepper.
That's all true, and over the last 4 days we've argued around all this when we found out about the vote. But, Pepper, whether perfect or not, we can't allow a single person to rule us. It goes against everything we believe in, everything we worked for when we created Haven.
Pepper grunted.
I know.
And you're going to walk away?
I have to, because this wasn't some power grab. It was the will of your people. There was a vote. Pan is right. It is the rightful ruler. But,
Pepper pointed at him,
I'm not leaving you empty-handed.
What do you mean?
He handed over the backpack and pressed a small stick with a button into Stanuel's hand.
The EMP device is in the backpack. You won't get anywhere near the tower to take out just Pan, but if you trigger it in the hub after I leave, it will shut Haven down. Pan will have backups, and his supporters will protect the tower, but if enough people feel like you do, you can storm it with the guns in that pack.
You're asking me to fight?
You know your history. The Tree of Liberty needs to be watered with some blood every now and then. Thomas Jefferson, I think, said that. Most of your ancestors fought for it. You could have kept it, had you just taken the time to vote yourself instead of leaving it to something else.
I don't know if I can.
Stanuel was bewildered. He'd never done anything violent in his life. Pepper smiled.
You might find Pan is more willing to fold than you imagine. Think about it.
With that, he stepped into the airlock. The door shut with a hiss, and the spacesuit faded into camouflage black as Pepper disappeared inside whatever stealth ship had brought him to Haven. Stanuel stood there. He pulled the backpack straps up over onto his shoulders and made his way toward the gardens, mulling over the mercenary's last words. A hologram of Pan waited for him at the entrance to the gardens, but no goons were nearby. Stanuel had expected to be captured, with the threat of a long confinement ahead of him. But it was just the electronic god of Haven and Stanuel.
You didn't understand what he meant, did you? Pan said. It really was the Panopticon, listening to everything that happened in Haven.
No. Stanuel held the switch to the EMP in his hand, waiting for some trick. Was he going to get shot in the head by a sniper? But Pan said it didn't use violence. Maybe a tranquilizer dart of some sort?
I told you, Pan said. I also created the resistance.
But that doesn't make any sense, Staniel said.
It does if you stop thinking of me as a person, but as an avatar of your collective emulators. Every ruling system has an opposition. The day after I was voted into power, I had to create a series of checks and balances against myself. That was the resistance.
But I was recruited by people.
And they were recruited by my people, working for me, who were told they were to create a tame opposition as a honey trap.
Pan flickered as he walked through a tree. An incongruous vision as Staniel floated through the no-gravity garden.
Why would you want to die? Because I may not be what all of you want, just what most of you want. I have to create an opportunity for myself to be stopped, or else I really am a tyrant and not the best solution. That is why Pepper was hired to bring the EMP device aboard. That was why, ultimately, he left it with you.
So it's all in my hands, Staniel said.
Yes. Live in a better economy, a safer economy, but one ruled by what you have created. Or muddle along yourselves.
Pan moved in front of Staniel, floating with him. Staniel held up the metal tube and hovered his thumb over the button.
Men should be free.
Pan nodded sadly.
But, Staniel, you all will never be able to get things done the way I can. It will be such a mess of compromise, personality, mistakes, wrong choices, emotional choices, mob rule, and imperfect decisions. You could well destroy Haven with your imprecise decisions.
It was a siren call. But even though Pan was perfect and right, it was the same song that led smart men to call tyrants leaders and do so happily. The promise of quick action, clean and fast decisions. Alluring.
I know it will be messy, Staniel said, voice quavering. And I have no idea how it will work out, but at least it will be ours.
He pressed the button and watched as the lights of Haven dimmed and flickered. Pan disappeared with a sigh, a ghost banished. The darkness marched its glorious way through the caverns towards Staniel, who folded up in the air by a tree while he waited for the dark to take him in its freeing embrace. And that was our story. My motives are sometimes transparent. And yes, I ran this piece when I did because of the U.S. election in a week and a half. I want to make clear, I don't consider Escape Pod a politically partisan podcast. I do have a favorite candidate, I have my own very strong opinions, and I'll confess, I have once or twice been tempted, thinking, how could I make a difference? How can I do my part to support my guy? Oh, wait, I have an audience of 24,000 people. But I'm not going to go there. For one thing, it'd be impossible to without losing some of you, no matter what I said. And I think it's disrespectful to the real purpose of this podcast, which is to awaken interest in a genre that celebrates thinking for yourself. That said, I think the message in this story, that giving up your power of decision means giving up all your power, deserves to be hammered home. The ultimate balancing effect in a working democracy is simply that we're all a big mess of people who all think differently, and that's a good thing. That only matters if we exercise our power to choose. Flawed as the system is, imperfect as our choices often are, refusing to participate is guaranteed to make it worse. When apathy becomes the majority rule, the people who are least apathetic end up running things by default. We call those people zealots. And I don't like it when zealots have power over me. So if you're a U.S. citizen of voting age, whatever you believe in, get the hell out there and vote. Not because I said so, but because your excuses aren't good enough. Okay. Now I've done my part. Our episode this week is sponsored by Audible.com. I've mentioned that they have exclusive science fiction audio. They've just upped their game on that with a new short fiction shared universe called Metatropolis, The Dawn of Uncivilization. This is a series of connected novellas in a future of zero-footprint cities, virtual nations, and conflict between technologists and eco-survivalists. The series has five of today's best authors, four of whom you've heard on Escape Pod: John Scalzi, Elizabeth Baer, Jay Lake, this week's author Tobias Bakel, and Carl Schrader. The narrators of the stories, oh, you'll like this. Michael Hogan, Alessandro Giuliani, and Candace McClure, that would be Colonel Ty, Gata, and Dee from Battlestar Galactica, and Scott Brick and Stefan Rudnicki, who narrated Dune and Ender's Game. This is top-tier audio, folks. You can get the first story as a free download if you go to audible.com/metapod, and if you like it, buy the others. I'm going to go off script here for a second. Yeah, we're being paid to promote this, but my personal opinion is this is the kind of project I'd like to see more of. Original short fiction in audio that pays well and is truly professional quality brings more people to us and gives you more to listen to. I've already paid my money for the full collection, which just came out the other day, and I'm looking forward to listening to it. Again, if you want your first free download, which is the Jay Lake story, it's at audible.com/metapod. All right, let's cover feedback from Escape Pod 174, Private Detective Molly. This was A.B. Gelman's Kid Noir piece about an AI-driven Barbie doll that uncovers social services corruption and saves the girl. Short form? People liked it. Some people loved it. Zaka said, "I'm always a great fan of stories told by a point of view that is not ours. It points out flaws in the things we take for granted." Bull Deceiver agreed, quote, "There's something really powerful to me about the unreliable first-person narrator, and we've had several stories over the years using the limited programming of AI poking around the edges of a much deeper story. Little Worker, Edward Bear, Robots Don't Cry, even The Life and Times of Penguin, though without the AI angle." Scott C. said, "Hearing a hard-boiled detective say, 'goo,' nearly killed me." A few folks felt it was too predictable, or that some of the logical inconsistencies got to them. Audita Sum and others asked, "If Molly had no self-preservation instincts, why did she fear rats so much?" Eitan said he figured it out the first time the operation was mentioned and spent 15 minutes waiting for Molly to catch up. I'll comment back on that. Unfortunately, that's an inherent risk with any mystery story. A good mystery writer should be able to construct a story such that most readers are surprised. But if everyone's surprised, it was probably a cheat. Beyond that, we had some digressions into the politics. Lagbert said, "As a side note, why does sci-fi almost always assume the Republicans are in charge?" And some discussion on how much invasion of a child's privacy is appropriate for parents. The most controversy came from Anna Ely's reading and voice. Most people felt very positive about it. A few people found her voice grating, or the accent or pronunciation got to them. Some, like MacArthur Bug, said they were prepared to hate the reading, but enjoyed it once they got into the story. Thanks to all of you for your feedback. Quote of the week, seconded by Zathras, came from Roshak, who said, "A kid should never know the sacrifices that a parent, uncle, or 18-inch doll make for them. Just that they are loved." On that note, Escape Pod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is distributed on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. All of the rights are reserved by our authors. If you like this week's story, please tell a friend or blog about us, and if you can, please consider donating via the PayPal link at our site, escapepod.org. Also check out our horror podcast, Pseudopod, and our fantasy podcast, Podcastle, both at their .org domains. Both have been running some amazing fiction lately, and everyone's ramping up for some scary stories for Halloween next week. If you don't like creepy at all, take the week off. Our music is by permission of Daikaiju. You can hear more from them at daikaiju.org. Our special closing song is "You Be King" by Andy Guthrie, courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. I ran this one once a long time ago, and it's pretty long, but my gut says it's the right way to cap this story. It's the last couple of minutes that do it for me. That was our show for this week. Our closing quotation comes from late journalist Sidney J. Harris, whose column in the Chicago Daily News landed him on Nixon's list of enemies. He said, "Democracy is the only system that persists in asking the powers that be whether they are the powers that should be." We'll see you next week. Until then, have fun.
Time is a lesson. and crimes are arrows, then signs will not be blessings as blinds cannot be toes. It shuns and goes in confessions and lines with rings and drapples. Black water to bathe all the lepers. Broken promise given from foes. You'll be king and we'll be all your slaves. You break backs and we'll submit and praise. Undressing with wine, in walks the truth. Red faces swollen with dirt, keep them buried, the blood and their worth. As Jesus was condemned, those that praise him still do turn your back on a world if they live not as you. Evil chokes on its own dressing as it bites, spits more than it chews. Blessings and evil overrode, then greed would not be envied as love shall not be cruel. Oh, it shines now in prisms and bathes in clear pools. What first had it taught us? It taught us in rules. Evil chose on its own dressing as it bites, spits. on that forward with speed. Leave devils to wander and goodness to heed. What came as a savior has always been fools of our own. We've seen what was written, we've heard what was used. Missions, graves, shackles, ghouls. The human condition, it lacks what it's sold to maintain. Put me on trial, put me to death. Raise me on high, bury the rest. We don't need miracles, only no pride or respect. Oh, a little to go on the forward with speed. Leave devils to wander and goodness to be. Who came as a savior has always been fools of our own. Oh, we've seen what was written, we've heard what was used. Missions, graves, shackles and ghouls. The human condition, it lacks what it's sold to maintain.